I want to thank you for having me. It's fun. I haven't been here in quite a while. Last time I came, I showed up on a corporate jet. We didn't even go through customs. This time is a lot more fun. Enjoy the company more. I want to tell you about some work I did together. I've been thinking about with Andrew Cross and Kali. We started this when we were all three of us at IBM. Kerr's now at Caltech. And now I'm in Boulder. The basic idea is to try to understand in some kind of systematic way what functions of entropies are actually additive. Okay. So the basic purpose of information theory, or sort of goal of information theory, is to try to understand what are the optimal rates of sending, storing, or processing information. So for example, we might be interested in distilling maximally entangled pure states. We might be trying to transmit a state from one place to another, or simply compress either quantum or classical information to the best possible way that we can. This is a picture of quantum key distribution. We might be interested in establishing remotely secure key, or some kind of more complicated thing where we're trying to transmit just classical information to two separate senders where we have correlated channels. Now, I wanted to emphasize that you can ask questions, and to really encourage that, I will not continue the talk until somebody asks a question.
Did you mean to say two separate receivers or two separate senders?
Two separate receivers.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Very good. It wasn't even a plant. I am so happy. It works with classes, but I didn't realize it would work in a talk. I thought we might get stuck. Okay, good. So the questions in information theory are about what are the best rates you can achieve, and the answers in general are in terms of entropies of quantum states or random variables. So this is the entropy of a classical random variable, and there's the von Neumann entropy of a quantum state. And for example, if you want to compress some source to the optimal rate, the best rate you can get is given by the entropy of the random variable. Similarly, if you want to compress your share of a pure quantum state and hand it off to someone, you can compress it down to the von Neumann entropy and no further per copy of the state. The classical capacity of a channel is just given by the mutual information written here. And meanwhile, there are quantities related to quantum capacity and private capacities that again can be expressed just as sort of simple functions of entropies of states that you can make with the channel you're studying. Jess, did you want me to recap anything or?
I need the interest.
But do they start at 4 usually? Is it 4? Okay, 4.
For the really good stuff,
like,
we should all
on time. Okay. Okay. And one of the most important properties of entropic formulas like these, where we sort of maximize some linear combination of entropies, is additivity. Right. So if we can, for example, we can show that the classical capacity of classical channels is additive in the sense that if I take the product of two channels, so I take the parallel use of two channels, the capacity of the joint channel is just equal to the sum of the individual capacities. That lets us show that the mutual information optimized on a single use of the channel is actually the ultimate capacity of that channel. So in a quantum world, non-additivity is actually typically the rule. So in the sense that most of the time, if you ask if some entropic function you care about is non-additive, either you can't, either it's non-additive or you can't actually figure out how to show it's additive. And this is a good thing in the sense that it gives us better rates. So in principle, entangled signal states can actually boost the classical capacity of a quantum channel. It's also kind of a bad thing if you're a researcher, because most of the time we just don't know how to compute things like the capacities, distillable entanglements, et cetera. And we have upper and lower bounds for the quantities we care about, but typically they're pretty far apart. Good. So for the rest of the talk, I want to tell you about a class of formulas that we can show are additive, and we can actually also sort of totally characterize that class of formulas in the sense that if you give me a formula, I can tell you if it belongs to this class in a fairly simple way. And furthermore, this class captures sort of all of the additive formulas, all of the quantum additive formulas that we know of. So it sort of it captures all of the standard strategies we typically use to try to show additivity. Okay, so this is just a slightly more detailed description of the setup. So we're going to be interested in formulas that involve entropies. So you have some channel that you're trying to study. It has an isometric extension, so it maps A to B and E. And an entropic formula is just going to be some linear combination of the entropies of a state that you can make using that channel. So you start out with some state phi v1, v2, v3, A, and you make phi v1, v2, v3, BE, and then you just take whatever linear combination of the entropies of the various subsystems that you care about. So for example, if there's just a v1, so we have one auxiliary variable, then there are sort of seven different entropies that could appear over here. And as you add more auxiliary variables, there are more and more potential entropies that you could include in your linear combination. And we want to find the coefficients, the alpha values, for which we can show the maximum of this entropic function is additive. So we're interested in maximizing over all possible states with the appropriate number of auxiliary variables. And we want to find out when such a maximized formula is additive, in the sense that when I take two channels and take the tensor product of their isometries, the maximum is achieved. It's achieved on a tensor product input state, and as a result, the maximum value is equal to the sum of the individual values. Okay, so that's the kind of formulas we're going to look at. Let's look at how we usually sort of show that that such a formula is additive. Basically, well, we want to show that the function evaluated on these two different channels is equal to the sum of the individual ones. Usually, what we do is we just try to show that the thing is subadditive. That's because if you can show this, you can always achieve the right-hand side on the tensor product of the two channels by just using the two associated optimal states on the right-hand side. Okay, and this one I was getting confused because I was expecting this slide, not the last one. This is sort of the standard way that we show an entropic formula is additive. Usually there are sort of two steps. There's one step where, there's one step where we take whatever reference state we've got here, phi 1, 2, that's made for both uses of the channel, and in some way we split it up into two reference states, phi tilde 1 and phi hat 2, such that this just goes with the first channel and this goes with the second channel. And that gives us a sort of, go ahead.
So why is there a tilde on one and a hat on the other?
Oh, because I want to be able to, because they may look different, first of all. And I could just call it at this stage phi 1 and phi 2. But they each have auxiliary variables associated with them. And those auxiliary variables might actually be living on different spaces. So I want to distinguish those auxiliary variables too. And I'm going to do that using tildes and hats. So I put a tilde on the phi too.
Is there going to be a phi 1 hat?
There's not going to be a phi 1 hat. Okay. Maybe it's redundant.
Okay.
Probably true. Okay. So we split them up into these two states. These two states are sort of relatively simple functions of this original state. And then that gives us a sort of candidate inequality here that, if we could show it was true, would be sufficient to show additivity of our formula. And we'll say that the function f alpha is uniformly additive under this decoupling if we can show this inequality for all such states, phi 1, 2. Are there any questions at this stage? Good.
I don't really know what the reference states are. Are they physical things that somehow fit into the circuit diagram that you drew before, or some?
Yes. So they're sort of, in the simplest case, you have some, you make some state, you prepare some state phi v a, and then you act on it with the channel to make phi v b e. And this is the thing that we call a reference state. So it, if you're thinking about just a classical capacity, this would be like the distribution on the distribution on the input to the channel. So the classical capacity is given by the maximum mutual information over all input distributions to your channel of the mutual information between x and y. And what? This is just sort of the correlation that you generate between some reference state and the output to your channel by using the channel. And you can see it's just a linear combination of some of the entropies of the variables there.
Is it going to be an entangled state?
No. This in general will be entangled, yeah. This is just meant to represent a classical variable.
Okay, and so then the 512, does that refer to the BA?
Does that, sorry, can you say it again?
You have phi subscript 1, 2.
Yeah.
And are they the same as, the subscripts 1 and 2, are they the same as your subscript BA?
Oh, so phi 1, 2, actually, I have some B and then I have an A1 and an A2. And this goes into channel 1 and this goes into channel 2. So phi 1, 2, the 1, 2 means that we're talking about some state that goes into two uses, channel 1 and channel 2. And then phi 1 is the state that you make out of this original state that goes into just channel 1 or channel 2.
But your phi 1, your phi 2, you were saying earlier, it doesn't have to be that same V, it could be...
Right. Maybe even the next slide will give an example of that. Okay, so the sort of classic example of something that you can show is additive is the entanglement assisted capacity. So we're here maximizing the mutual information between our V and B system over all the possible input states. And we want to show that this quantity is additive. And the way we do it is we say, suppose I started with some phi VA1A2. I want to find two states, one of which can go into the second channel, and one of which can go into the first channel, such that I can actually prove that the mutual information with two uses of the channel is no bigger than the mutual information with one use of the channel. So you can see what we do here is, maybe I'll just draw a picture to help explain this a little better. So we have this state, phi 1, 2, that is suitable for using with, can you guys see this over here? For using with two uses of the channel. And we want to generate two states, one for each use of the channel. So the easy one is phi tilde, right? We just trace out A2, and that gives us phi tilde on B tilde. A1 is just this state with partial trace. But then to make the second state, phi hat, instead of just tracing out at A1, what we do is we apply the channel to this state to give us a B1 at the output,
And we collect these two together and call them V hat. So V and V1 together now make up the new V hat. And that gives us a state that we can use to evaluate the mutual information on the second use of the chain. And then the point is, if you now write down the sum of the mutual information evaluated on phi tilde using the first channel, and the mutual information evaluated on phi hat using the second channel, you can show, basically using subadditivity, that that sum is always bigger than the original mutual information evaluated on two uses of the channel. I stepped on it a few times, I'm afraid. Okay. So what we want to do is kind of mimic this procedure and see how strong it is. When can we show an arbitrary formula is additive by using this kind of decoupling where we sort of get our phi tilde and phi hats by just applying the channel or the isometry associated with the channel, and then using the only inequality we know for entropies, a strong subadditivity. Okay, so that covers sort of the introduction. At this rate, it's going to be 100 minutes. Is that okay? He said it's okay. All right, so what I guess I want to show you today is basically you can figure out all of the coefficients that will that are additive in the sense that using the mappings we discussed and strong subadditivity, you can show that they're additive in that way. And furthermore, we'll find later that actually this is quite general in the sense that even if there were other entropy inequalities besides strong subadditivity that we don't know about, you still wouldn't be able to show additivity in this sort of uniform sense of using these particular kinds of decouplings. Okay, so we're going to, like I said, focus on this a sort of what we call a standard decoupling, which is, you know, you've got this state on V1 up to Vn and then A1, A2. You want to find a way to turn it into some state that is up to from V1 to Vn tilde on just A, and then just A1, or V hat to V hat n on just A2. And the mappings that we look at are just of the sort where if you want to get rid of the A1 system, you just use the channel, or maybe it's isometry, to generate a new state here. And now you've got this B1 and E1 sitting around. And then you just pick some V that you sort of glue those onto to generate the new V hats. And similarly for A2, you apply the channel to N2 when you're trying to generate. You apply channel N2 to A2 when you're trying to generate a state with just an A1. And then B2, E2, you sort of glue on to some of the other Vs in order to make some V tilde. So as you can see, there are sort of many choices you can make. And we want to know, sort of as a function of this choice, what are the additive formulas? Is it clear what I mean by a standard decoupling? John?
No.
No. OK, good. What I mean is the following. Pardon?
When he said no, it wasn't clear. He said good.
Oh wait, it's good that he was honest. Yeah. Okay. The point is, I have this state. Let's just look at 5v. Let's just look at 5v a1 a2. I need to find a way to turn this into two states. A phi tilde, where there's just a V tilde in an A1, and a phi hat, where there's a V hat and an A2. And then I'm going to evaluate the formula on this state using just channel 1, and then this state using just channel 2.
And what's decoupled?
The systems A1 and A2. I mean decoupling in the sort of plain English sense of the word rather than in the technical Shannon theory sense of the word. Right, we have these two random variables, A1 and A2. They have some correlation. In principle, that correlation might generate a non-additivity of the entropic formula. But in the cases we're interested in, it's possible to break that correlation in a way that doesn't lead that only can improve the value of the formula that we're evaluating. So the decoupling is just this mapping from one state on two uses of a channel to two states, each associated with just one use of a channel. And now a standard decoupling is one where I say, look at this A1 system. I've got to get rid of it, so I just have a V and an A2. So I apply the isometry of the channel 1. And then I basically group these B1 and E1 together with V to make some V tilde. Or maybe I trace out E1 and put B1 with V to make V tilde. Or maybe I trace out B1 and put E1 to make V tilde. Or maybe I trace them both up. So there are four options I have for a standard decoupling when I have one auxiliary variable and I'm trying to get rid of just this one system.
Yes? Sorry, what's the advantage in tracing one out?
It might give you a higher value of the entropic formula.
Even though they're not being used in the channel at all?
Yeah, because it gives you a different sort of reference state with respect to which you're evaluating the formula. And it turns out, depending on whether you trace one out, both out, or neither, you get different things that are additive, and the classes are sort of incomparable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess these incompatible formulas don't have to satisfy any kind of monotonicity under trace.
Not a priori. Although you can throw that in and you can get sort of, I would say, more interesting looking formulas. Okay, so the first ingredient was the standard decoupling. Now we want to explore the second ingredient, which is inequalities that are satisfied by entropies. And we're going to apply those together with standard decoupling to find new additive things. Okay, so strong subadditivity is just the positivity of a conditional mutual information, which you can write like this. You can rewrite it in a, well, let's see. It implies all of these little inequalities down here beneath. And in fact, if you're given strong subadditivity, this is sort of the only inequality that we know of that quantum entropies satisfy. It may be that there are more. Indeed, it's probably true that there are more inequalities. For example, in the classical case, there are inequalities besides this. For instance, here's one, just the positivity of conditional entropy. That's not satisfied by quantum entropies. But there are also these things called non-Shannon type inequalities, which are sort of more exotic combinations of entropies that we can show are positive. And furthermore, we can show cannot be demonstrated to be positive using just strong subadditivity.
You mean those only exist classically?
We only know of them classically. There are conjectured inequalities that people think von Neumann entropy satisfied basically based on those non-Shannon inequalities, but we don't know how to prove them. And actually the bottleneck is the main way of proving these non-Shannon type inequalities is the first step you do is you make a bunch of, you make extra copies of some of your variables. Then you apply strong subadditivity to the expanded number of variables. And then because of the symmetry of the original state, you get back down to some new inequality that's not some linear combination of strong subadditivity on that just that small number of systems. And just the first step, we just don't know what to do. And luckily, we don't need them. What I mean by this is if you write down all the standard decouplings and you say, what are the things that are we can show are uniformly additive with respect to these, it turns out that if you lie outside the class of formulas that you can show are additive with respect to a standard decoupling, then you can show that there's always a state with respect to which the inequality is just not true. So there's no sort of uniformly additive function that you can show is additive, but you can't do with strong subadditivity. Okay, so I want to show you, I guess, sort of the first the simplest case of trying to understand uniformly additive functions, and that's where you have zero auxiliary variables. So there are only three entropies involved. There's the entropy of B, the entropy of E, and the entropy of BE, and you want to maximize some linear combination of those over input states to your channel. Because there are no auxiliary variables, there's sort of only one decoupling that you can do. You do the partial trace, and that gives you some inequality that you would like to prove to show additivity. It's given by this, and then you can go off and sort of test whether that inequality is implied by strong subadditivity. And you find the following answer, which is just a formula is uniformly additive if it has zero auxiliary variables, exactly when I can write it either as a positive linear combination of these four terms, entropy of B, entropy of E, or one of the conditional entropies. And there's an alternative characterization of this in terms of the faces of this cone of additive formulas. These are basically the rays of the cone, and these are the faces of a cone. And anything inside the cone is uniformly additive, and anything outside the cone, there's always a state that makes F sub alpha not subadditive. And that means it can't be uniformly additive. We require that for uniform additivity that for arbitrary input states, this inequality is satisfied. Okay, and for just one auxiliary variable, we can also solve the problem. It helps to start by just considering a more special case of formula where you just include these four terms, the terms that involve the auxiliary variable. So you could, in principle, also have terms that don't involve the auxiliary variable, like entropy of E or entropy of B. It turns out that the solution we found for the zero auxiliary variable case, we could sort of piggyback off that and reduce the general case of one variable to just this more special case. And what we do is we fix some standard decoupling. Now there are a priori 16 different choices. And for each standard decoupling, we can characterize the set of alphas with respect to which, we can characterize the set of alphas that give uniformly subadditive formulas with respect to that decoupling. So we can go off and just sort of compute what those cones associated with each decoupling are. I should say that actually, while there are a priori 16 different decouplings you have to consider, there are actually only five inequivalent decouplings, and they give us each of these five different cones. So you can just sort of label the decouplings from 0 to 3 on each side, for either the V tildes or the Vs. That just sort of determines where the B1 and E1 go. Do they get traced out or do they get put with the V tilde? And having done that, you can go off and compute an additive cone associated with that decoupling, and you can figure out what the extreme rays are. And then in general, for the arbitrary one auxiliary variable case, you can always break it down into some zero auxiliary variable formula and a one auxiliary variable formula of that special form that we just...
Can you go back to time? What is this AB? Sorry.
Oh, AB. A just, it goes from 0 to 3, and it just tells us whether you trace out both one, the other, or neither, when you make up the V tilde. So there are four choices there. We just labeled them 0 to 3. B is the choice that you make for the V hat systems instead of the V tilde systems. So the product is 16 you end up with sort of a large number of different decouplings. So they're just a way of labeling what the decouplings are. Okay, and having done that, you can sort of reduce, let's see, you can reduce this arbitrary formula into this, or two separate formulas that are slightly shorter, and you can also show that basically any formula of this form is uniformly additive exactly when this zero auxiliary variable case formula is uniformly additive independently, and this one auxiliary variable formula with only four terms is also uniformly additive. So they both have to be uniformly additive in order to make sure that the sum is uniformly additive. So then if you want to go off and build a formula that's additive with respect to some decoupling, you just pick some formula that's in here and add it to some formula that's over here. This section just shows that these sort of standard decouplings are sufficiently general or pretty general in the sense that there's a class of non-standard decouplings that you can that don't give rise to any additional formulas from the ones we already found. Ah, good. So this has sort of a complicated, you know, there's a lot of different formulas you could build up using this table, but there's a particularly interesting one that I wanted to highlight here, which we called the completely coherent information, which is given by that formula there. So this completely coherent information, it's just the maximum now over our reference state on V and A of the difference between the entropy of VB and the entropy of EV. We called it the completely coherent information because if you get rid of the Vs, if you make them trivial, then this is just the coherent information, the entropy of B minus the entropy of E. And that thing's not additive. But sort of by adding this auxiliary system in a similar way to what you do when you're defining complete positivity compared to positivity, you get a much more nicely behaved formula. So it has several properties that I like. The first is that actually it's symmetric in B and E. Maybe that's not obvious from the way it's written, but you can always sort of purify this system to this state phi to some F, and then this would become entropy of EF, and that would become entropy of BF. So when you're maximizing over phi, so when you express it that way, you would see that actually the completely coherent information of a channel is equal to the completely coherent information of its complementary channel. Now, it's actually nice. We can show it's a lower bound for the cost of swapping B and E. So if I have some state A, B, or if I have some, if I look at the state version of this thing, and I have some state A, B, E, and B and E want to swap their shares so that at the end of their protocol, B is holding E's share and E is holding B's, then this quantity is actually a lower bound for the cost of swapping those two, the quantum communication cost. And it's also an upper bound for the simultaneous quantum communication rate to both B and E that you can get. For degradable channels, actually, it's exactly equal to the quantum capacity. There are other channels where it's sort of substantially bigger than the quantum capacity. And in fact, we're not entirely sure whether this or whether this quantifies or what this quantifies in terms of operational tasks. And that's something I'd really like to see. I am missing a slide. So I would like to show you another interesting quantity that I think, that we found that's I think is quite nice and is in need of an operational interpretation, it's this. Again, it's just a single auxiliary variable. We look at the mutual information between V and B and take the difference with the mutual information between V and E. Now, classically, if you maximize this, it gives you exactly the optimal rate at which you can communicate to B privately from E. So the optimal rate for doing cryptography and when your eavesdropper is just sort of modeled by some sort of broadcast channel. In the quantum setting, actually, this thing is non-additive, as far as we know. But if I take the entropy of BE and add it to this quantity, then actually it has two nice properties. The first is that this is now additive and indeed uniformly additive. And the second is that it now satisfies data processing. So if I evaluate this function, on a channel n, and then I do some further processing on that channel, the value of the function is now going to be no greater than the original value. So this has, I think, something to do with private capacities or at least privacy, but it's sort of a second quantity that I think would be nice to understand the operational interpretation of. Oh, and something else I wanted to highlight was you can do the whole story, that the whole game that we did there for classical entropy formulas too. And it turns out that although classical entropies satisfy additional inequalities, none of those inequalities are useful for proving additivity or uniform additivity of entropic formulas. So it turns out that sort of once you write down all of the formulas that you can show are additive in this way, it exactly coincides with the formulas of classical information theory. There are certain formulas, certain entropic quantities that are additive classically that don't fall into this class of uniformly additive functions. And roughly speaking, those are exactly the formulas where, in order to show additivity, you need to know something about the optimum state for the formula that you're looking at. So a good example of this is the minimum output entropy. If I'm dealing with a pair of classical channels, N1 and N2, and I'm interested in looking at the minimum output entropy of N1 and N2, so I'm minimizing over probability distributions on x1 and x2 of the entropy of y1 and y2, where the channel maps x1 to y1 and x2 to y2. We can actually show for classical channels, this is additive. The way you do that is you say, you say, first of all, entropy is going to be concave. So when I try to minimize it, I end up on the boundary of all possible states. Another way to put it is the minimum output entropy of a channel is always achieved by some pure input state. Now, for a classical channel, that pure input state is going to be some value x1, tensor some value x2. But because this is also a product state, the entropy of the individual the joint channel acting on this product state is just going to be the sum of the individual entropies on each of those individual states. And as a result, this thing is just going to be equal to the minimum entropy of y plus the minimum entropy of y, y1 plus the minimum entropy of y2. So I think it's interesting. First of all, in order to show this, you do need to know about the structure of the inputs of the input state. In fact, the inequality that you would, the sort of inequality you would have to use if you were trying to show that this is uniform minimum entropy, output entropy is uniformly additive, is simply not true. It only holds for product states, and it seems not to be a coincidence that actually the stuff that you can show is additive but not uniformly additive is exactly the stuff that seems to be additive classically, but we don't know how to show is additive in a quantum setting. And the reason is usually we end up using tricks like either like this or using the fact that we know how to express conditional mutual informations as averages of mutual informations in a classical setting. Okay. So there are a lot of open questions about all of this. One of the most interesting, but I think also difficult things to look at is, can we find quantum formulas that are additive but not uniformly additive? And the reason that's a challenge is that this uniform additivity idea really captures roughly all the standard techniques we know of to show additivity. So you kind of almost by definition need to have some new idea in order to find non-uniformly additive but additive functions. We talked about these standard decouplings, but I haven't been able to rule out that there's some more general, maybe channel-dependent, but non-standard decoupling that allows you to show additivity for other functions. Again, I don't have particular ideas about that. I just don't know how to rule it out. And I'd like to understand what this completely coherent information is and whether it's good for anything, and also what this formula is and whether it's good for anything. And finally, I'd be very interested in understanding why there's this correspondence in terms of uniform additivity of both classical and quantum entropic formulas. And with that, I will stop a little early.
Questions for Rick? On that last point, is the mystery why the other entropic inequalities don't really help in the classical case, or is there more to it than that?
No, it's exactly what you said. I mean, what I would like is some, because, you know, there's this sort of folklore that if you throw in free entanglement, generally quantum questions become more or less equivalent to classical questions. I don't know a way to formalize that, but I do have a feeling that it's related to this correspondence. So I'd like to maybe, I hope that this is just a further hint that there's some general result that you could show about this equivalence.
Other questions?
Would a non-uniformly additive quantum be one where, like, it doesn't hold for all states, but just one that achieved the maximum?
Yes, exactly.
And there are examples like this classically, I think.
Classically, yes. But well, for instance, quantum, there.
For example, okay. And also Gelfand-Pinsker used that as well.
Okay. So actually, this you can show classically, just this without the additional thing. You can show that it's additive too. But the way that you do it is first you show this. You show that this is additive. Incidentally, this is uniformly additive. But you can reduce, you can prove the additivity of this from the additivity of that by writing these conditional mutual informations as convex combinations of plain old mutual informations. So that step sort of fails here. There are definitely cases classically where you can show additivity where you really do use some information about the optimal state, and as a result, you don't have uniform additivity. But first, I only sort of know of like little examples of them. And second, I don't know in any of those cases how to move the result over into the quantum case.
Do we have classical examples where you have to use a non-Shannon type in a bond to prove additivity?
I don't believe so.
So at the beginning, you mentioned there were many quantities where we know that they're not additive,
mm-hmm.
and some where we don't know how to prove. So what's an example of something where we don't know if it's additive or not in the quantum case?
Let's see. Well, this one, for example. What's another? Classical capacity, we don't know. We know that the Holovo information is additive, is rather not additive, but we don't know if the regularization is additive or not. And that, I mean, that's sort of hopelessly difficult, it would seem. Because you really have to understand you have to understand the asymptotics of the regularization, and then you have to understand it twice in order to combine the two channels and see what happens. If there are no further questions, we can thank the speaker.